voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is Iran Radio, and here are some interesting facts about Islam. Inventions that emerge from the Islamic world include the discovery of Critic acid, Jaber ibn Hayyan, architecture, the minaret, the bridge mill, the vertical axle windmill, teaching hospitals, marching bands, early torpedoes, the guitar, the lute, the water pipe, also known as hookah, early attempts at gliding, algebra, the pinhole camera, the laws of refraction of light in optic, coffee, and more. Muslim scholar Ibn Haytham, known as Al-Hazen in Europe, who was born in 965 AD, formulated the scientific method and has been referred to as the world's first true scientist. He is also often regarded as the first theoretical physicist, making a significant contribution to the theory of light and optics. Additionally, he developed what is called celestial mechanics, which led to the eventual work of Europeans such as Copernicus, Galileo, Johannes, Kepler, and Isaac Newton. Welcome, dear listeners, to another day on Iran Radio, broadcasting from the heart of Tehran. I invite you to settle in as we bring you a thoughtful blend of voices, views, and stories that matter. Our next program is Spotlight, your daily lens on the most crucial events happening in the world today. Join us for roundtable analysis and discussion of topical and sometimes controversial issues, with two expert guests providing their sharp insights. That will be followed by Kids Corner. The program is all about children and child's play, a fun program specially made for children. Following that, Member brings the pulpit's wisdom to life. In Member, we feature selected excerpts from the speeches of well-known Islamic scholars covering a wide range of topics, including ethics, theology, Quranic interpretation, Islamic history, and sometimes even social and political issues. Member brings timeless words that inspire thought, faith, and action. Up next is Spotlight. Please stay with us.
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The plight of Palestinian inmates in Israeli prisons has become a defining human rights crisis, exposing what many advocacy groups and international observers describe as systematic crimes against detainees. Reports from UN agencies and Palestinian prisoner advocacy groups document a disturbing pattern of torture, sexual violence, starvation, medical neglect, and arbitrary detention without trial. With thousands imprisoned, including women and children, many held under administrative detention, the incarceration system has become an extension of broader policies of domination and dehumanization. I am Bahman Noura, your host, and this spotlight seeks to see whether these practices constitute not isolated abuses, but a deliberate institutionalized machinery of oppression that violates international law and the most fundamental principles of human dignity. Let us begin with the report.
Since the outbreak of Israel's genocidal war on Gaza, Palestinian men and women held in Israeli military and prison facilities have faced systematic ill-treatment, including torture, sexual violence, and severe neglect. Many have died after being abducted and held under inhuman conditions. According to a 2024 report by the UN Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, Many inmates from Gaza and the West Bank have been held arbitrarily, blindfolded, shackled, and often without being informed of the reasons for their detention or granted access to legal counsel. Also, testimonies from released prisoners describe repeated beatings, stress positions, electric shocks, the use of dogs during interrogations, and forced nudity or other forms of degrading treatment. Many detainees return to their families or to medical examiners with signs of severe beatings, starvation, and untreated medical conditions.
They use tear gas against us every week. It's difficult to describe the pain we suffered in the prison. The men were constantly being beaten.
We weren't allowed to sleep. They forced us to stay awake for 16 hours. The food is terrible. You need permission to go to the toilet. They forbid us from praying.
Local NGOs say nearly 100 Palestinians have died in Israeli prisons or detention centers since 2 years ago. The real number is believed to be far higher due to a lack of transparency, missing detainees, and Israeli regime's refusal to release full information. UN experts have repeatedly raised the alarm over arbitrary detentions and widespread mistreatment of prisoners. They have demanded Israel immediately end the systematic torture and abuse of Palestinian detainees to protect their rights to life and to allow independent oversight.
There continue to be the use of practices that clearly violate the prohibition on torture and other cruel, inhuman or degrading treatments, such as constant blindfolding, stress positions, handcuffing for extended periods of time, overcrowding, degrading conditions.
Israeli officials have denied access to independent monitors and have failed to comply with court orders demanding improved food, hygiene, and medical care inside detention facilities. Global human rights organizations warn without an independent international investigation and full detainee information, prisoners and their families will continue to be denied justice and more detainees will remain at risk.
Welcome back. Allow me to introduce my guests. Mohammed Al-Ghiq, political analyst, writer and former Palestinian prisoner, joining us from Ramallah. And Leila Hatoum, editor-in-chief from MENA Uncensored, joining us from Beirut. Well, it is indeed a pleasure to have my guest with me. It is a very important topic and I'm going to start. Let me see which one of my guests is available right now. Mohammed Al-Ghiq is with me right now. Mohammed, I'm going to start the conversation with you. First, I want to talk about the legal and more specifically the international law perspective. These administrative detentions, how do they align with or contradict international legal standards?
Yeah, thank you for having me. First and foremost, Israel ignored the international community, ignored the international law. And by the way, it uses the administrative detention as a tool to torture the Palestinians, to prevent them from their life, to distract their daily life, their future, under the pretext of secret informations or files to prevent them from resistance, etc. I think the recent actions from the Israeli prison service and the Israeli army, the Israeli government, indicate the systematic, the organized policies against the Palestinians, the Palestinian prisoners, their life. And the Palestinian prisoners, by the way, have been subjected to torture, isolation, medical negligence. All of these types of restrictions or collective punishment, as you like to name, all these policies, I think, Israel took it because took them because the absence of the accountability, the absence of the real will of the international community, the international law, and the silence of the Arab countries, the Muslim countries, that encouraged Israel to take bolder steps against the Palestinian prisoners by starving them, isolating them, torturing them. This is the point here, and with these conditions, I think Israel will take more steps against them.
Mohammed, now that they are, you're assuming that these are like contrary to the international law, what I want you to tell me, can these actions be also classified as war crimes or crimes against humanity?
This is an important question. Thank you for this question. We are here. Let's look at a bigger picture now. We saw the measures of ICJ and ICC against Netanyahu, Yoav Gallant, and some officials in Israel. But we didn't see any action from ICJ, at least, against the head of the Israeli prison service. She has to be held the accountability, the accountable here, and we didn't see any actions. That means the pressure from US on the ICJ and ICC, even the United Nations, is huge to prevent them from take any points or any steps against Israel. Now, with this situation, okay, Israel will go ahead against the Palestinians. By the way, they are preparing for execution bill against the Palestinian prisoners to achieve many goals here. And why they wanted that?
Right.
Because they paralyzed will of the international community.
Indeed, very insightful. Thank you so much, Mohammed. Well, gladly, Leila Hatoum is also with us right now. Leila is editor-in-chief of MENA Uncensored. Great to have you on this program. Leila, we're talking about the legal perspective on the issue of abuses that are happening and occurring and reoccurring in Israeli jails. Now that we can consider them, if we can consider them like crimes against humanity and war crimes, what will be the role of the International Criminal Court now?
Most definitely not only crimes against humanity, but war crimes as well. You have to understand, under international law, Israel is considered an occupation power. That's why the United Nations calls the West Bank the occupied Palestinian territories. In that sense, the occupation has duties and obligations. One of them is not to persecute or ethnically cleanse the land or basically do arbitrary detention and torturing people. So at the end of the day, because of the state of war between the Palestinians and the Israeli occupation, because of the state of the occupation under international law, this is considered not only a crime against humanity, but also a war crime. Needless to say that every war crime is a crime against humanity in that sense. Detaining people without basically arbitrary detention, without any basically cause, at the same time torture, sexual assault, raping, among other things, electrocution, constant blindfolding, all of those constitute crimes. However, you have to bring them to the court of justice, be it the ICJ through countries, like basically South Africa did to the genocide that's happening in Gaza, or basically to the ICC against certain individuals to be able to prosecute the Israelis over that matter. Unfortunately, until today, we did not see neither the Palestinian Authority nor the states actually bringing these cases to the ICJ. They only brought the cases that were happening in Gaza, the constant genocide over there, to actually go after the Israeli occupation and its officers and its basically officials as well. So in the next phase, we need to see states and what you call larger entities, like Human Rights Watch, among others, moving such cases at the ICC level. So no matter what, we need to have cases to be able to prosecute the Israelis. However, I do understand that the ICC and the ICJ are paper tigers. They're toothless. They have no ability to implement their decisions. So in that sense, you have to have the victims or their families file individual lawsuits or class action lawsuits,
right,
against Israeli officials who are directly tied to such crimes like Ben-Gvir, among others, in different countries across the world.
Right, Mohammed. Well, of course, you're a former prisoner. You've experienced and been through the Israeli prison life. I want you to tell me, to what extent do you believe policies like this administrative detention are rooted in security concerns rather than political directives?
Yes, as your guest, Leila, said, the international community, the international law, I think, put Israel and encouraged Israel to go through these policies, like the administrative attention. Okay, when they arrested me, for example, when they arrested me, they accused me with or of many charges, like military actions, etc. I refused these charges. They threatened me to go through the administrative detention or to admit these charges. I refused, and they changed me, and they turned me to administrative detention. I began my hunger strike against that. Why they use this policy, the administrative detention, to achieve many goals, to prevent the Palestinian resistance in the West Bank, and to vanish or to destroy the spiritual soul of the Palestinians, especially the prisoners inside jails, to intimidate the Palestinian people, the internal front, and to deter the leaders of the resistance in the West Bank, or influencers, writers, academic staffs, students, all these sectors, Israel considered them as a terrorism or as a threat against its existence. This is the policy of Israel against the Palestinians in the West Bank under many pretexts. Now they use the same policy against the Palestinians from Gaza, from West Bank, Jerusalem. Why? To achieve these goals, to deter the Palestinians. I think with the silence of the international community, Israel considers itself above the international law. And by the way, it took bolder steps against the Palestinians to torture them, to isolate them. By the way, we saw the two recent stories in one day, just in one day. The story of Tasnim Al-Hams from Gaza and her conditions reflect the situation inside Israel, the reality there. And the second story from Jenin, after they arrested two people there, they shoot them, they killed them. Why? This is the law of as jungle land. They use these policies against the Palestinians because the absence of the accountability.
Right. Leila, I wanted to talk to you about the effect of this aggressive and inhumane, one must say, prisoner policies in Israel and how it affects the broader Israeli-Palestine conflict.
Well, you have to understand that the Israelis are not there to actually create peace between them and the Palestinians or any of their neighbors. In that sense, they have to create an atmosphere of animosity around them. And how do they do that? By targeting every generation. It's very rare to find a single Palestinian, be it a child, a teenager, or a man, who hasn't served, even a woman, by the way, who haven't served some time in the Israeli concentration camps. These are not prisons. Again, this is an occupation. So these are concentration camps. Most of them have basically suffered under arbitrary detention and administrative detention, as we call it, which is detaining people without cause for lengthy periods of time. So at the end of the day, they are creating that atmosphere of animosity around them to create that friction and to tell the world, look at us. We are trying to find peace over here, but the people around us hate peace and they keep attacking us, so we have to eliminate them. The way that it reflects on the Palestinian society and the relations between the Israelis and the Palestinians, there will always be vendetta. I mean, if they haven't killed somebody from a Palestinian family, they have surely detained one and tortured one, and they have taken loved ones away from their families. In that sense, they will continue to disrupt the fabric within the Palestinian society, and they will continue to create that friction. And eventually, basically, we saw what happened. Tension in Gaza, tension in the West Bank. Today, they have basically cleaned the Palestinian refugee camps of nearly 56,000 Palestinians. They are not allowed to go back to their basically camps in the West Bank, right? And they have detained most of them, including one of the mayors from Tammun. So when you look at the whole situation, the Israelis are looking to create that friction so they can use it as an excuse to continue to take further land and attack the Palestinians. The Palestinians will feel left out by the international community, as usual, and they will have to take matters into their own hands, and then they will be blamed for it, and they will be called terrorists. It will be always that broken record of the Israelis creating a problem, the Palestinians retaliating to it, then the Palestinians will be blamed for the fact that they are actually retaliating.
Right, Mohammed, if you remember a few weeks ago, when the video of the Israeli abuse in prison was leaked by a high-ranked military official of Israel, we were discussing this, and you said this is not just to inform others, this is to instill fears, and this is a propaganda step by the Israeli regime. It's well thought of. I want to talk about the Israeli domestic politics. How do you think they affect such prisoner policies?
I think Israel implements the carrot and stick policy against the Palestinians, and measures, and desperate times, desperate measures. They don't care about the humanity. They don't care about human laws or humanitarian coordination or something else, or even the humanitarian protocol. They violated the international law. They violated all the international laws, most notably the Fourth Geneva Convention of 1949. But I will be precise here. The Israeli government intensified these policies against the Palestinians to achieve the main goal for them, the nucleus goal, to expand it, its territories, and to put more pressure on the Palestinians, especially in the West Bank. When you see the daily life in the West Bank, you will be surprised. Checkpoints, military barriers, iron gates, demolishing homes, confiscating land, and they intensified the settlers' attacks against the Palestinian properties, main roads, water springs, pastoral areas, etc. Why Israel implemented these policies? To annex the West Bank, to cram people into the hard cities, and to deter the Palestinians, to prevent the resistance, and to send a message to the neighboring countries that Israel has a plan, and it coordinated it, its plan with Trump to go through the new Middle East project, to go through a greater Israel at the expense of the Palestinians, at the expense of the neighboring countries, at the expense of the stability and prosperity in the region. This is the point for Israel, because of that they use these policies against prisoners, against people, against civilians in the West Bank and Gaza, even in Jerusalem.
Right, Leila, I want to not talk about the international reactions to these allegations. Ethically speaking, what is the responsibility of the global communities and also the NGOs, both in recording these abuses and responding to them?
Well, you have to understand that most of the international community, including the big five countries at one point in time, have signed or ratified or joined almost all of the agreements when it comes to human rights, when it comes to stopping a genocide, when it comes to upholding their role in the international community to stop crimes against humanity. So at the end of the day, when you look at the situation where some of the countries show that they are shocked, but they don't do any action, others disregard it completely, playing dumb, basically deaf and blind, it tells you a lot that almost all of the international community is complicit on this in this matter. Otherwise, the Israelis wouldn't have been flying above the radar and above international law. They have impunity because of this lack of action, the inaction of the international community. We have 192 member states of the United Nations and one entity, which is the occupation entity. And the 192, you only have about 191 who actually didn't take any action, and only one took an action. That's basically Iran. We have to be very, very clear about this. The only state that took action as a state is Iran. The rest of the states, they didn't do anything. Sending few packages of food over here and there, throwing some money to the on the problem, it doesn't change anything. Boycott should have been played on a wider scale. It didn't. And that's the least that they could have done. They kept the Israeli entity as a member, quasi-member of the United Nations. The United Nations didn't kick them out or suspend them. And that's very interesting to see. And then you have the big five countries protecting the Israeli entity. So at the end of the day, I'm looking at complicity, hypocrisy, and the will not to do any action. This is by will. This is actually something that they chose to do.
Regarding this willingness, Mohammed, I want to see, what do you think about the Israeli response to all the UN resolutions, some international calls that exist in order to end these alleged abuses of the Palestinian detainees? What does it say about Israel's willingness to engage with global accountability mechanisms?
Unfortunately, let me clarify something for you. The recent decision from the Security Council about Gaza vanished all the resolutions, all the decisions to give the Palestinians their rights. And by the way, the recent decision gave Israel more self-confidence, gave Israel more a huge permission to go through the annexation plan, to go through its policies against the Palestinians. And when we are talking about the international community, the complicity, the silence of the Arab regimes, we are talking about the massacres of Israel and bolder steps on the ground. Now, what is the point of United Nations Charter if it doesn't stop the starvation, the genocide, the ethnic cleansing in the West Bank, the organized policies against the Palestinian prisoners, at least to give the Palestinians their right? We heard many stories from the Israeli jails, not to mention Sidi Timan, rape crimes, or et cetera, something about the Palestinian prisoners. We are talking about the reality now. Israel wanted to change the reality in the West Bank, the Gaza Strip, Jerusalem, and the neighboring countries to implement its plan. And we have to see the actions from the international community. Now, we have nothing. All these efforts will be in vain because there is no accountability now. Let me tell you about the prisoners. We didn't hear or we didn't see any statement from the international community of the Red Cross about the Palestinian prisoners and the subjugation and the policies against them. But we are hearing many statements. We are seeing many stances from the international community, from the international institutions about the Israeli prisoners, and they demanded to bring them back home. But about the Palestinian prisoners, nothing. This is the double standards policy.
Right. It was a pleasure to have you both on this show. Thank you so much, Mohammed Al-Ghig, political analyst, writer, and former Palestinian prisoner joining us from Ramallah, and also Leila Hatoum, editor-in-chief of MENA Uncensored, joining us from Beirut. So this was another Spotlight. Thank you so much for staying with us.
Where we walk with pain in our hearts. Oh. Jesus sent to release us from the jaws of evil and hate. You're the master of all existence, you hold our fate. I can be free, nobody's holding me. I'm on the road to be where Allah is pleased with me. We can be free.
Welcome, kids.
Hey, man.
Hey, girl.
Hello.
Hi.
My brothers, my sisters, and all of my gentle friends. This is a song that I have learned. Let's sing it.
Welcome to
the
Kids
end.
Corner. And you know, you're not going to go wrong when you're at Kids Corner.
We say, Assalamu alaikum, wa alaikum, assalam.
Assalamu alaikum, dude.
Assalamu alaikum, wa alaikum, assalam.
You're listening to Brother Ali at Kids Corner. Are you ready?
Yes.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay?
Okay.
Are you guys with me?
Yes.
Okay. Alright, good job, mashallah, you guys are doing it. Ah, good question. I'm about to answer that question.
Our salvation, he knows everything, past or future, and aware of every word or gesture. Whatever we do is under his sight, be it done in the dark.
Kids Corner. A'udhu billahi minash shaitani rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin. Wassalatu wassalamu ala sayyidina Muhammadin wa alihi tayyibin at-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil farajah.
Welcome, dear listeners.
Hello.
Hi.
Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.
You're listening to Brother Ali at Kids
Corner.
Yeehaw!
Welcome, everyone.
Assalamu alaikum. Assalamu alaikum. Wa alaikum assalam. Wa alaikum assalam. Come to the masjid, come to the masjid. Wash and pray, wash and pray. These are the things that will keep the devil away.
Missed you guys. All right, we're back now. What did we talk about last week in the last session?
About sitting etiquette?
About sitting etiquette. Very good. But today, we're going to talk about something else. And that is etiquette of leaving the house. Wow, we didn't know we had etiquette there too. What should we do when we leave the house? Huh? We're going to talk about that. Islam teaches us so many things. It teaches us the way of life, correct? How to enter the house, how to leave the house, how to sit, how to eat, how to drink. We talked about all of that, right? Now we're going to talk about how to leave the house. Interesting, isn't it? Did you ever think that Islam will talk about such a thing, leaving the house? Did you ever think about that? It talks about it. Our books talk about it. The books of Ahadith talk about this. The Ahadith of the Holy Prophet and the Imams. Okay, so when we leave the house, what do we say? The first thing we say when we leave the house, what should we say?
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
There you go. Yes, dude.
Way to go.
You're right, man. Okay. Bismillah. You start with Bismillah, of course. Okay. You leave the house. Imam Raza alayhi salam said, when you want to leave the house, then say Bismillah, Amantu billah, Tawakkaltu ala Allah, MashaAllah, La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah. Okay? You need to memorize this. Okay? I start with the name of Allah. That is Bismillah. I brought faith in Allah. Amantu billah. I rely on Allah. Tawakkaltu ala Allah. Whatever Allah wishes, that is MashaAllah. And there is no ability nor power except by Allah, by the leave of Allah. There's neither power nor ability save by Allah. That means no creature possesses either ability or power over anything except Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, who is able and capable. So, what do we say when we start, when we get out of the house? Bismillah. Amantu billah. Say it.
Tawakkaltu ala Allah.
Very good.
MashaAllah.
Very good.
La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah.
Ahsant, Aliyul Azim, you can say that too, because one of the Imams used to say, La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah. Okay, very good. So the Holy Prophet said, whoever leaves home and says Bismillah, you know what the angels do? The angels tell him, this person, live peacefully and safely. Isn't that beautiful? When you leave the house and you say Bismillah, the first thing you say is Bismillah, the angels say, live peacefully and safely. Okay? When the person says, La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah, the angels tell him, your work is done. Your job is done. Like, for example, you're getting out of the house and you have some work. It's like done, the angels say. And when the person says, Tawakkaltu ala Allah, the angels say, you are protected or you are safe from calamities. Isn't that beautiful? So we should make it a habit when we leave the house, we should say, Bismillah, Amantu billah, Tawakkaltu ala Allah, MashaAllahu.
La hawla wa la quwwata illa billahil
aliyyil azim. Ahsant, very good, very good. So basically, what do we learn from these two ahadith that we just talked about? We talked about ahadith of the Holy Prophet and Imam Rida alayhi salam. Which Imam is Imam Rida?
Eighth Imam,
very good. Okay, so what do we learn from these two ahadith that we just talked about? We learn that when we leave the house, we should say Bismillah. That means no matter what we do, we take the name of Allah, it's good. We're doing dhikr of Allah, we're remembering Allah. So don't just, when you leave the house, remember Allah. When you enter the house, remember Allah. Okay? When you board a plane, remember Allah. When you do that, then you're under protection. You do tawakkul on Allah, you rely on Allah. That means you're always remembering Allah, so you'll stay away from sins. Like for example, if I leave the house and I say Bismillah, Amantu billah, Tawakkaltu ala Allah, MashaAllah, La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah, Aliyul Azim. When I say that, would I go out and sin?
No.
No. Because I'm so careful when I leave the house and think of Allah, I will stay away from sins. Isn't that beautiful? That's one of the philosophy.
Assalamu alaikum, Zainab.
Wa alaikum assalam.
How are you doing today?
Alhamdulillah.
Good. Can you think of any nasheeds you'd like to sing?
I know one.
Okay, which one?
Little Bird.
All right. How about if you sing it on your own?
By myself?
Yeah.
Okay, inshallah.
All right.
Little bird, where has your mother gone? Why are you here all alone? Little bird, where is your nest? Why are you so far from all the rest? Allah knows the language you speak, and Allah can lift you high. Allah can bring you home again, for Allah is stronger than I. Allah is stronger than I.
Now the next thing we do is we take out sadaqah. Before we leave the house, you can take it out before we leave the house also. Because sometimes, you know, you can't find poor people around, right, to give sadaqah. Mm. So, like, for example, in the Western countries, you don't find poor people everywhere. Now, so where are you going to give the sadaqah? You take it out, put it in a bottle or a container.
No, there's a charity box even available.
You can on the streets there are charity boxes. You just put it in the sadaqah box. Or if you don't want to do that, you might forget. Just take it out at home and keep a sadaqah box inside at home. Put it in every day before you leave the house. It's very good. If you can give someone, that's good. But if you can't, just put it in there. And once a month or maybe every 15 days or every few months, 6 months, whatever, take them all out and find a poor person or give it that to a poor person. Or sometimes some beggars come and ring the bell. Give it to them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Give it to them, okay? Give them a whole lump sum or give them a big amount. They'll get happy. Mm. Okay. All right. So first thing we do is we say, Bismillah. Ayn amantu billah, tawakkaltu ala Allah. MashaAllah, la hawla wa la quwwata illa billah. Now, suppose you forget all of this. So you can't remember. Just say Bismillah. At least say Bismillah. Okay? It's not wajib to say all of this. And then you take out sadaqah. Or you take out sadaqah before. Whatever. Okay? And when we leave the house, it should be for a reason that is halal. It should not be, we should not leave the house for doing, God forbid, something haram. Okay? Sometimes some people leave the house with evil intentions, like, I'm going to go and cheat that guy, God forbid. I'm going to make the money illegal way, haram way. It's all.
Huh? I'm going to go and steal something from the shop.
Yeah, God forbid.
No!
You know, all of these are evil intentions. So go with pure intentions. When you leave the house with pure intentions. So you'll be doing pure things. Like, what are the pure intentions? What things can you do when you leave the house? Like, for example, you'll leave the house to go to school, to go to relatives, to visit the Mu'mineen brothers or sisters, right? Or visit the sick, ayadat, right? Or to earn halal money. Correct? All of these things. So it's all good things. It's okay to go and earn halal money. There's nothing wrong with it. It's a pure intention. So, and the next thing we do is when we leave the house and we see in the neighborhood our neighbors. Correct? Whether they're kids or adults, greet them. Say, Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.
Very important. Okay, do not just walk without greeting them. Greet them. It's humble. Say, Assalamu alaikum. Remember, there's a lot of thawab. We talked about this long time ago. When we initiate the greetings, we get 69 points. And the person who answers, it's wajib on that person.
What if on a busy street there's so many people? We're supposed to greet every single one of those people. For example, in places like New York, the streets are flooded with people.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the neighborhood. Our neighborhood, you know, the little kuchas, little alleys. When you're, like, when you're in New York, like, for example, you're leaving, you've got thousands of people, or Bombay you go to, or Calcutta you go to, thousands of people. Oh, you don't know anyone, and they're all rushing and all that. No, that's different. In your neighborhood, in your little kucha, in your little alley where you live, I'm talking about when you get out.
Yeah.
And suppose, you know, you're walking, like, in big streets of New York, whatever, it's good. walk with a smile, say hi. If you have any eye contact with anyone, say hi, how are you, you know, whatever. Or if there's a mu'mineen brother, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, you know. Nah, nothing wrong with that. It's good. It's a good habit. Keep it. I mean, if you can, do it, you know. But it's impossible to say hello, hi. So, oh, hi. Yeah, that's how we do it. That's impossible. No, I'm not talking about that. Now, so when we leave the house, we see little kids playing or adults, whatever, say salam to them. And the next thing is walk humbly and do not walk arrogantly. You know? Do not walk arrogantly. Walk humbly. And because there's an ayah in the Holy Quran, it says,
وَلَا تُصَعِّرْ خَدَّكَ لِلنَّاسِ وَلَا تَمْشِ فِي الْأَرْضِ مَرَحًا وَلَا تَمْشِ فِي الْأَرْضِ مَرَحًا إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يُحِبُّ كُلَّ مُخْتَالٍ فَخُورٍ.
He says that, do not turn your face away from people in contempt, nor walk proudly on earth. إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يُحِبُّ كُلَّ مُخْتَالٍ فَخُورٍ. Indeed, Allah does not like any conceited boaster. Okay, what does it mean? It's saying that when we walk, like suppose you're walking and suddenly, you know, this, you see a person, you turn your face. I'm not going to look at that person. You know, some people do that, right? They don't even think, I'm not going to look, right? And they just walk without even, you turn their face from that person. That is arrogance. Allah says, don't do that disdainfully. It is not right. Okay? And walk humbly on earth, because Allah does not like somebody who walks arrogantly. Once the Holy Prophet saw some people, it's a beautiful story. He saw some people surrounding a person who was mentally ill. He was retarded. So the Prophet asked them, what are you doing? And they said, we're watching this person who is mad or crazy. The Prophet said, he is not mad nor crazy. Rather, he is ill. He's ill. And then the Prophet said, and do you want me to point to you the one who is really mad? Who's really crazy? And they said, yes, O Prophet of Allah. The Prophet said, Holy Prophet said, the one who walks arrogantly on earth is the one who is really mad or crazy. What a beautiful hadith, right? What do you learn from this hadith, my dear brothers and sisters?
We learn.
Okay.
We learn that it's like being mad to walk on earth proud, because what is it that we should be proud of? We do it every human day. We go to the toilet, we eat.
So yeah, okay, yeah. Very good. So yeah, what are you arrogant? What are you proud about?
Huh? Yeah,
you're doing the same thing. You
one
sneeze.
Day you're here, the next day you'll be in your grave.
There you go. Very good. Beautiful. Ahsan. Very nicely said. So, yeah, there's nothing to be proud about. What are you proud about, man? That means this person is really mad because he's arrogant. Okay, you have something to say?
That means we should learn that we should not walk arrogantly, because it will be like that. The next day will be in the grave, maybe, or we'll be look like, as the Prophet said, we'll look as we are mad, uh-huh. And then we're...
Okay, so basically what Hashim was just saying, right? Yeah. Right, so there's nothing to be proud about. So if a person is walking proudly on earth, then he's the real madman. That's what the Prophet is saying. Okay, what else do we learn from this hadith? We learn that the Holy Prophet really paid attention to the surroundings. He was very busy. Okay, he had tons of things to do. But he still took out time to stop and ask people as to what they were doing. You know, people were like, if I'm busy, I'm walking, and there are people, like a group of people standing somewhere, I think, oh, I don't have time for that. I'm leaving. I got better things to do, right? But the Prophet, no, he was the Prophet of Allah. He stopped and he asked him, what are you doing? He did not say to himself, I got better things. Like, you know, he didn't say that. He went, he approached the people. And it shows that the Holy Prophet was always after teaching the people. Of course, he was the messenger of Allah. He was always teaching and guiding them. Okay? And we learned that turning our face away disdainfully from people is not a nice thing to do. and Allah does not like it. We learn that we should walk humbly.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returns upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
So going back to when we leave the house, we should start with Bismillah, amantu billah, tawakkaltu ala Allah, mashallah la hawla wa la quwwata illa billah, and give out sadaqah and greet the neighbors or people you encounter and walk humbly and get out of the house with the pure intention. So far we talked about all of that, correct? Okay, now what else do we do when we leave the house? Any other ideas? What should we do?
Leave the house tidy?
Leave the house tidy? I mean clean? Don't leave a mess? Okay, that is different. I'm talking about when you're out of the house now.
Out of the house?
Yeah, out of the house.
You just left the door.
Left the door, you start greeting people, salam, how are you? Hey, how are you? Yo.
Oh.
Okay, and then, you know, you greet people and you walk humbly and all that. So what do you do? What else? I'll tell you. You got any ideas? Sumaiya, we try our best and accumulate rewards while walking. How? We get rewards just by walking. We can accumulate reward. We talked about a couple of rewards already. Greeting people, we get rewards. For saying Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, we get rewards.
Leaving the house with wuzu?
Okay, that is good. Leave the house with wuzu, that's good too, very good. And you should always try to be in wuzu. It's very good, Ahsan. But anything else, when you leave the house, you're already out of the house, you greet people, you accumulate rewards. What else?
You say salawat while you're walking.
Okay, good. You do the dhikr of salawat while you're walking. Perfect. That's another one. And if you see an old person carrying something heavy,
we should help him.
Offer to help. You get the thawab. If you're not in a big hurry. Like, for example, you're like, 1 minute to school, you're running, you suddenly see an old person. I mean, it's not a wise thing to do. You better go to school because you're going to be late. Correct? But if you're not in a hurry, you know, and you see an old person, go offer help. Can I help you? You know? And if you see an old person needs help crossing the road, help that person. Again, if you're not in a big hurry. Okay? So accumulate rewards. Just by asking, suppose you go and ask, the old person says, leave me alone. I can carry this. Some people are very cantankerous. You know, they don't want to touch. No, no, just leave me alone, kid. I can handle this. Okay, no problem. Thank you. You know, at least you tried. At least your intention was good. Allah knows your intention. You will get the reward. Okay, and the old person really needed help. He will say, okay, please help me. Thank you, son. May God bless you. Blah, blah, blah. Right? So that's how you accumulate rewards. Okay, so what are we talking about? We're talking about the etiquette of leaving the house, how to leave the house, and how do we accumulate the rewards when we leave the house, right? And the different etiquette, we're going to talk about that in the next session, inshallah, and we're going to talk about some travel etiquette too. Are you guys excited? And that will be the next session. Until then, Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen.
Assalamu alaikum, brothers and sisters. Here's Sister Batul again with a wonderful story.
It's story time.
Once a child was walking in the forest,
going to the left and then the right.
So impressed, he pondered the sight,
seeking to discover the hidden secret.
keep yourself tuned in here with Sister Batool.
Well, let's go.
It's story time, story time.
Salaamu Alaikum, brothers and sisters. And today's story is about Qarun. Qarun belonged to the community of Prophet Musa alayhi salam. And according to some riwayas, traditions, he was the cousin of Prophet Musa alayhi salam. And the Almighty Allah had given him so much wealth that the keys of his treasure could not be lifted with a strong group of people. But this man, Qarun, continued to oppress his community. No matter how much people of his community asked him to refrain from pride and selfishness, to behave nicely to others, to be kind to the orphans, not to spread mischief in the earth, to deal with the weak and needy in the best way. But this man, Qarun, gave a deaf ear. When Qarun came out dressed beautifully, those who were inclined to materialism said, "Wow, I wish we were given as much wealth as Qarun." They were jealous of him. When Prophet Musa sent people to collect zakat, that is the poor rate from him, Qarun replied, "I worked hard for it. Why should I give it to others?" He refused to pay the zakat, the tax. Moreover, you know what Qarun did? He played a dirty trick on Prophet Musa alayhi salam. He asked a woman to give false witness that Prophet Musa alayhi salam sinned. Prophet Musa was very depressed by this and he cursed him. Then Qarun was swallowed by the earth. Destruction and misfortune surrounded Qarun in such a way that those jealous of him said, "Thank God we were not in the place of Qarun, or we would also have been destroyed." I hope you enjoyed the story. And brothers and sisters, think about the moral in the story. And I shall be back again in our next session. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen.
I am a Muslim, dedicated, keen on being educated. Neat I am and well behaved, in every affair well arranged.
See you next time, same time, same channel.
Our love, our Lord, the sole creator. Glory to him, the best supporter. Allah, the best of the apostles. He is the greatest of prophets. Allah, the best of the apostles. He is the greatest of prophets. And my darling mom, I love her much. Who overwhelmed me with her touch. My dad is thriving for my interest. Among my friends, he is the best. My dad is thriving for my interest. Among my friends, he is the best. I am a Muslim, dedicated, keen on being educated. Neat I am and well behaved, in every affair well arranged. Neat I am and well behaved, in every affair well arranged.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.